the Christmas season is a short one, shorter than Advent. And we don't measure it by weeks, but by feasts. So today is not Wednesday of the second week or third week. It's Wednesday after Epiphany. Kind of an awkward way of describing it, but that's what it is. Wednesday after Epiphany. Sometimes it's called Christmas weekday after Epiphany. So we're in this season between Epiphany and the baptism of the Lord. And we have seen that we're reflecting now on how God reveals himself in the world, not only when he's born, or not only when the Magi see him, but when Jesus is in his public ministry. You see, once Jesus came into the world, God was visible in Jesus Christ. Now, for 30 years, he led a hidden life. But once he started his public ministry, my goodness, he was revealing himself all the time. So we could pick out almost any passage from the public life of Jesus and use it during this season after Epiphany. But the church picks out some very striking ones. Yesterday, the multiplication of the loaves. Today, Jesus walking on the water and calming the sea. Now, to get a sense of what's going on at this time of year, I'd like to read a little excerpt from this morning's Office of Readings. This is from one of the fathers of the church, St. Proclus of Constantinople. It's just an example of the richness of the church's centuries of pondering these mysteries. This kind of richness we don't get from modern biblical study or more scientific study, because the scholars nowadays tend to be very strict about exactly the meaning of the words and the historical context and this sort of thing, which is all very important. But in the earlier church, what they did is they pondered the mysteries, and so they were able to see things in a bigger and richer way. So here's a few lines from St. Proclus of Constantinople. He's comparing now, or putting side by side, the event, the Christmas event, the birth, and the Epiphany events, meaning not only the Magi, but also Jesus' baptism. And he says this: on this day, meaning Epiphany, land and sea share between them the grace of the Savior, and the whole world is filled with joy. Today's feast of the Epiphany manifests even more wonders than the feast of Christmas. You see, this is the perfect reading for this time of year, then, after Epiphany. On the feast of the Savior's birth, the earth rejoiced because it bore the Lord in a manger. But on today's feast of the Epiphany, it is the sea that is glad and leaps for joy. The sea is glad because it receives the blessing of holiness in the river Jordan. So it considers the Jordan part of the sea, and there's water, land and water. At Christmas, we saw a weak baby giving proof of our weakness. In today's feast, we see a perfect man, hinting at the perfect Son who proceeds from the all-perfect Father. At Christmas, the King puts on the royal robe of his body. At Epiphany, the very source enfolds and, as it were, clothes the river. Come then and see new and astounding miracles. The Son of Righteousness, S-U-N, Son of Righteousness, washing in the Jordan. Fire immersed in water, God sanctified by the ministry of man. This is pondering, right? This is not scientific study. This is pondering. It's fire in water. That's the baptism. Okay, there's more to the reading, but that's just an example. Now, looking at the miracles of yesterday and today. Yesterday was multiplication of the loaves, a kind of creation miracle, because loaves can't, there's no natural way for them to multiply. If it was at the creation, when God created everything and he created the animals, he said that now, you know, be fruitful and multiply. So fish multiply, animals multiply, that's part of how God made creation. But loaves of bread don't multiply. So that Jesus made them, you could almost say, out of nothing or out of the five loaves, creation miracle. Which is divine action. Creation is a divine action. It's a way of, the miracle is a way of revealing God at work in this man, Jesus, the Word made flesh. Now, in today, we see Jesus, is it after the miracle of the bread, we see him walking on the water. It's a striking thing to reflect on, because in the baptism, which we haven't gotten to yet, but it's part of this week, Jesus is plunged into the water, and the church celebrates the plunging of divinity into creation, fire into water. Not that the fire goes out, but that it purifies the water and makes the water holy, makes creation holy. But in this miracle, Jesus is standing above the water. So it emphasizes his divinity, right? God is above creation. He is not part of creation. So here's Jesus in the Jordan, he sinks in. In this event, he stays above. So because he's God and man, I'm trying to show that this is a revelation miracle. And when he's walking on the water, the reaction of the disciples is that they're not seeing a human being. They're seeing a ghost. They're seeing a spirit being. And he wasn't a ghost, but you can see that their intuition is partly right. This is something, he's someone who's not an ordinary man. Otherwise, he wouldn't be walking on the water. So not only that, it's in the middle of the night, so how could they see him at all? Some of the fathers have pondered that perhaps he was glowing or has something radiant about him, because they see him in the fourth watch of the night, which is very, very dark. And then, when he gets into the boat, the wind dies down. Well, who has power over the wind? Only God. Only God. To this day, the weather is out of our control, and it always will be. As highly advanced as our technology is, and AI predictions and all these things, it's out of our control. So it's God in our midst, God revealing himself in our midst. That's why it's an epiphany miracle. The reaction of the apostles reminds us that just because God reveals himself to them or to us, it doesn't mean that we get it. It doesn't mean that we understand it or accept it. It says here, they were completely astounded. They had not understood the incident of the loaves. They certainly had, and they're not understanding this incident either. It says, on the contrary, their hearts were hardened. That's a pretty severe thing to say about the apostles, because hardness of heart is the traditional biblical description of sinners. I'd love to look this up in the original language, but anyway, it says their hearts were hardened. It seems that, though, their main condition, or the main problem, is fear. Fear and lack of trust. Fear, which is driven out by love. And that's what we see in the first reading. So let's move back to the letter of John, the extraordinary first letter of John, where he's speaking about love. God is love, and God has made himself, I don't want to say visible, because it says here no one has seen God, but he makes himself visible. He reveals himself. It says we're celebrating the revelation of love. So no one has ever seen God, and we can't see love in itself, because that's God, but we can see love manifest, revealed. And that's what John is talking about here. But where fear dominates, love is not as easily revealed. So God is love, and when we love, God is in our midst, and we are in God, and God is in us, and this is what we're celebrating, our relationship with love, God. But then at the end, he says, there's no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. That's exactly what Jesus, who is perfect love, does when he's standing on the water. He says, it is I, do not be afraid. Take courage. Do not be afraid. He's driving out fear. Because fear has to do with punishment. So one who fears is not yet perfect in love. Okay, that's the apostles in the boat. They're still early in their in their journey with Jesus, they're his apostles, but they're overwhelmed, their hearts are hardened, fear is still threatened, they don't trust yet. And this is where we are as we journey through the Christmas season. We rejoice. First of all, Christmas is a season of joy. We rejoice God is with us. But we also have to yield to the overwhelming impact of God with us. And that can be frightening. We feel out of control when we're on the water. And we'd much rather stand on dry ground. Well, no, but Jesus is our security, not the earth. God, not man. And so if we want to have perfect love, we have to put our trust in Jesus, who is perfect love, and not let fear get in the way. Now, we'll feel the emotions of fear, of course. That's not subject to our will. But where we can make decisions, we can decide to trust in God, no matter how we feel. And this is Christmas. So we continue our journey, rejoicing that God reveals himself, and making the decision of welcoming, accepting in faith and in love what God has revealed, that is, Jesus himself.